Thank you for coming to join us. Thank you for those on the line for dialing in. I'm John Holland-Kaye, the Chief Executive at Heathrow. With me here is Michael Uzielli, who's our new Chief Financial Officer, who some of you will have met, and also Andrew Effiong, our Treasurer, and Anne Hearn, who leads on Investor Relations. So thank you for coming to join us. We're just going to run through our six-monthly update. So I'll take you through the operational highlights, which is the fun bit, and then Michael will go through the financial side of things, and then I'll come on to the strategic agenda, and I'd love to have questions at the end. And normally I ask for three questions at the end, so I hope that you'll start thinking of what those might be. I'll try not to explain some of the things on the slides, just to give you some prompts. And just to remind you, the slides that we're looking at can be viewed if you're on the phone, either through the link on the invitation or directly on our website. So let me come on to slide three, which just gives a quick overview. And operationally, this has been a fabulous start to the year. We've had some of our busiest days ever. In fact, today is the busiest day ever for departing passengers. But I think it'll probably also be one of our best days ever because we are getting better at managing these operational peaks that we have. We're seeing record levels of passenger satisfaction, and consistently now we are being rated by passengers as the best major airport in Western Europe, and we are really grateful for that recognition. Financially, we're up about 6% in revenue terms and slightly more in EBITDA terms, and we're starting to see the benefits of the cost reduction coming through. As we go into next year, we'll see, the second half of this year, we'll see some of the revenue growth slowing down when we get to different like-for-likes, but we'll start to see the benefit of the cost savings coming through more strongly. And we've been very successful with fundraising during the first half of this year, with £1.1 billion raised. And Andrew and Anne have been on the road around the world holding investor meetings, and that's been very well received by the market. From a strategic point of view, we're making good progress towards our goal of giving passengers the best airport service in the world and in delivering the cost efficiency and revenue initiatives we set out. So I'll update a little bit on those shortly. And of course, in the last few weeks, we've had the clear and unanimous recommendation for our new Northwest runway plan. And for those in the room, we just ran a video which just outlines how that will work. And I'll touch a bit more on that shortly. Let me just talk about traffic first of all. We're up just over 1% in terms of passenger volumes, and we've upgraded our forecast for the end of the year. A few dynamics going on here. We're seeing good growth with BA, particularly with the increase in seats on their planes. We're seeing some shift in traffic around the world. Generally, good growth to the markets you would expect, South America, China, Hong Kong. You'll see a slight dip in Asia Pacific. That's largely changes in airline strategy. So Virgin, having tied up with Delta, are shifting their capacity towards North America away from Asia. So that's the main story that's happening there. And North America continuing to do well. But if you look at how we compare with the other international hubs, you get a sense for what the opportunity is that we are foregoing by not expanding Heathrow, with Heathrow having been full for the last 10 years. So we've grown by just over 1% in passenger volume terms. Charles de Gaulle by just over 1.5%, but Frankfurt 3%, Schiphol 5%. And Istanbul, we've included for the first time, has now actually overtaken Schiphol in terms of overall passenger volume. That gives you a sense for how the world is changing. And if we don't take the steps in this country to keep up with our international competition, we will start to fall behind. You can start to see that happening here. I should just point out that although we only have two runways compared to four or even six at Schiphol, we do more with our two runways than they do with two or three times as many runways, and that just gives a sense for how efficient we are from an operational point of view, but also how with only one more runway at Heathrow, we will have more capacity than our main rivals in Paris and Frankfurt. In terms of service, we're getting record levels of passenger satisfaction. We've been in the top quartile of European airports for the last two quarters, and are now consistently ahead and quite some way ahead of our main hub competitors in Europe. So that's down to a whole number of measures, which I'll touch on in a moment. Punctuality has been pretty stable. The main factors we're seeing with punctuality are twofold. One is the growth of A380s in our fleet. We now have 23 A380s operating every day. We need to have more gaps between the very large planes and the smaller planes, and that reduces punctuality. So we're working hard to offset that. But the other thing we're increasingly finding, which will apply to all major airports in Europe, is that European skies are becoming more congested, and there are more strikes in some parts of Europe, particularly among air traffic control, and that is causing delays in the skies. So that tends to lead to lower punctuality and also lower baggage performance. So although we've been working hard on baggage performance, we're only a little bit ahead of where we were this time last year, and a lot of that is down to punctuality. But let me touch on some of the changes we've been making to improve passenger service. Now, a lot of this is designed around our basic service proposition, which is let's get passengers through the airport quickly and consistently every time. And so some of the things you will have seen if you've flown through Heathrow recently will be helping to deliver this. More security lanes, more parallel loading. It's a very British thing that you wait until the person in front of you has taken their jacket and unloaded their bags before you go and do the same. With parallel loading, we have three or four people doing it at the same time, and that just frees up the flow of passengers going through security. We've got our new integrated baggage system in Terminal 3. This is a world-class, state-of-the-art baggage system. We're about a third of the way through commissioning this, so it'll be fully on stream in around March of next year. But that's going very well and will improve the flow of bags to go along with the flow of passengers coming through the airport. But we've also been working on the airfield to improve efficiency, widening our taxiways so that A380s can pass around any part of the airport, more stands for the A380s, and introducing time-based separation, which again is a world first, which allows us to land more planes in high winds, but still do it safely. And we've also been working to become a better neighbor, make sure that Heathrow continues to become quieter, we continue to reduce emissions from the airport, and we encourage people to move onto public transport. So in the last 6 months, we have issued our air quality blueprint, which sets a target to be for Heathrow to be an ultra-low emission zone by 2025. and from a public transport point of view, to get another 2.9 million passengers or car users out of their cars and into public transport over the next 4 years. So we're working hard on those, again, to be a better neighbour. So let me at this point hand over to Michael to go through the financials and give a little bit more detail on that.
Thank you, John. Hello, everybody. My name is Michael Uzielli, and I'm the CFO, and I'm very pleased to be here for my first results presentation, and it's been good to meet many of you in person today, and I look forward to meeting many more of you over the coming months. So what I'm going to be doing is spending some time talking through our financial performance in the first half of the year and our expectations for the remainder of the year. And we have had a strong performance this year, as John mentioned, with EBITDA up 6.3%, driven by growth across all revenue streams and underpinned by good cost control. And our debt evolution that you can see on the slide mainly reflects the seasonality of our cash flows in the first half of the year. And we do expect this to moderate back to levels similar to the end of last year. So turning to our revenue performance on slide 10, you'll have noted that we've generated around £50 million more aeronautical revenue in the first half of the year. Over £30 million of this came from the higher headline tariff, slightly higher in 2015, and the 1.3% increase in traffic. And the remaining increase came from year-on-year factors, such as the absence of quite significant Q5 capital triggers last year, partially offset by a lower K-factor adjustment. Now, in the second half of the year, as John mentioned, we do expect the rate of aeronautical income growth to moderate, reflecting last year's change of regulatory period, when effectively in the second half we collected 9 months of tariff change and K-factor over the last 6 months. So we will see a lower aeronautical revenue performance in the second half. On the retail side, we're encouraged by our retail performance. We see our net retail income per passenger increasing by 4% to £6.67, and we're expecting this to continue to rise in the second half of the year. We've seen some really good growth, especially in luxury retail, which reflects targeted investment that we've been making in Terminal 5 with new shops such as Louis Vuitton and Fortnum & Mason, adding to our already very strong offering. And we're undertaking further refurbishment in Terminal 5, as you probably will have seen, to revamp World Duty Free, and we'll be also seeing other stores opening later in the year. In terms of other revenues, car parking revenues performing well too. We opened a new Terminal 5 business car park in February, and we're seeing improved upsell and yield management on products ranging from the T5 pod to short stay to meet and greet and to valet parking. And finally, on revenues, we've seen good growth in catering as well, particularly in Terminal 2 and in Terminal 5. So as I said, the tapering of aeronautical revenue in the second half of the year will be partially offset by strong retail growth, which reflects the initiatives we're taking, and also a bounce back from the impact of Terminal 5 refurbishment, which was taking place in the second half of last year. Moving on to costs. We have continued to deliver good cost control this year, and we're putting in a lot of initiatives to continue to drive costs down on a sustainable basis going forward. Our reported costs, which you can see on this slide, are actually up 5.5%, but our underlying costs are flat year on year. And just to explain, underlying costs adjust by about £30 million for the additional Terminal 2, the coming on stream of the Terminal 3 baggage facility, and costs relating to third runway expansion, offset by savings that we're now seeing from the wind down of Terminal 1. Now, as these things flow through in the second half of the year, we do expect to see our reported costs reduce year on year as the benefit of Terminal 1 and the cost efficiencies start to fully flow through. And as I've said, we are implementing a wide range of cost efficiency measures across the business. And these include improved supplier agreements across all aspects of our business, whether it's baggage, facilities management, engineering, air traffic control, a lot of energy efficiency measures, LED lighting, etc., reducing consumption significantly, restructuring in our support areas, new terms and conditions for new starters, improved frontline productivity, such as the parallel loading that John talked about, a voluntary severance program in some areas of our business, and also we've just completed the consultation on changes to our defined benefit pension scheme. So a lot of initiatives focused on cost, and together with others that we're planning, does mean we're making good progress towards our £600 million target across the settlement period, with almost 400 million now secured. And what we're very mindful of is that with the current low inflation environment, which puts pressure on our revenues, we're going to continue our strong focus on delivering the sustainably lower operating costs, working constructively with our colleagues and with our trade unions on some important workforce initiatives, some of which are slightly behind schedule. This will remain a key focus for us. Turning on to the next slide, operating cash flow. You'll note that operating cash flow now quite significantly exceeds capital expenditure and interest payments. We generated £729 million of operating cash flow in the first half, and this reflects a trend that we've seen since 2014, where we're moving to being cash generative after capex and interest. And this is a positive development, which we will see has further to go in the remainder of our regulatory period. The small rise in net debt that you see for the first 6 months of the year does reflect, as I said, the seasonality of our cash flows, which is the fact that we have relatively high coupons and dividend payments in the first half of the year and seasonally lower cash flow. About 52% of our passenger traffic is in the second half of the year, 48% in the first half. So we will be seeing this unwind in the second half, and therefore expect our net debt at the end of the year to be consistent with a forecast and similar to the end of 2014. And so you can see when looking at triggers and covenants, the slight increase in gearing does reflect that seasonality. And the other point to make on this slide is that the RAB, the regulated asset base, has been broadly flat since the year end, reflecting both the fact that regulatory depreciation has been slightly higher than CapEx and also reflects the low inflation environment. But when you look at it, we're very comfortable that we can manage the effects of the low inflation environment. Firstly, we continue to have very substantial headroom to the trigger and covenant levels across all our tranches of debt, in particular with around £750 million of headroom at the Heathrow Finance level. And the funding that we've been raising at both Class B and also Heathrow Finance recently means that we can dynamically manage our gearing across different levels of the capital structure. Moving to just some further developments on our debt financing, we've raised over £1.1 billion of long-term funding globally this year. I'm taking advantage of the beneficial market conditions to enhance our resilience, diversity and duration of our debt financing position. And thank you to many of you who have supported us in these transactions. Earlier in the year, we completed a €750 million euro bond in February with 1.5% coupon. We followed that up in May with our third bond in the Canadian dollar market, which is a very successful 10-year trade, reinforcing our commitment to the Canadian market. And we've also been active in the private placement market, including a 1 billion single investor Norwegian krona transaction. And finally, we've raised £150 million in 15 and 20-year private placements with two leading non-sterling-based major institutions. You might have noticed that we have a slightly more modest level of cash on the balance sheet compared with our position at March, and that reflects the fact that we've repaid two bonds issued by Heathrow Funding this year, a 2012 300 million sterling bond and a 2012 500 million US dollar bond. So overall, I would say we're very encouraged by the continued strong global support for Heathrow Credit across multiple markets, and this gives us great confidence in the context of financing expansion. So just to wrap up before handing back to John, we've had a strong start to the year. Our service and operational performance has been very encouraging during what are right now some of our busiest days that we've ever seen at the airport. Financially, we're seeing higher passenger numbers, good cost control, and new retail initiatives which are driving that 6% increase in EBITDA. We are, as I said, mindful of the challenge of low inflation on our revenues, which is why we're continuing to focus on further efficiencies. But in terms of the outlook for 2015, our guidance remains consistent with the guidance given in last month's investor report. So it's a year of two halves. First half, we see revenue growth higher and then moderating, reflecting the one-off boost that we saw in H2 last year. On the other hand, we should see an improvement year-on-year in reported costs falling, reflecting the closure of Terminal 1 and the delivery of those ongoing cost efficiencies. When you add that all up, we see at the moment revenue growth for the year of 1.8% to £2.74 billion. Good, strong cost control, delivering an EBITDA growth for the year of 2.2%, an EBITDA of £1.6 billion. So I'll now hand over to John to talk through our strategic developments, and then we'll both take questions afterwards.
Great, thank you, Michael. So let me just update you on how we're doing in our strategy. So our overall vision is to give passengers the best airport service in the world. And a year ago, when I came in as chief executive, I set four priorities for that mojo, which is changing our engagement with the people who work at the airport right across the Heathrow family, which leads to a transformation in passenger service, and make sure that we make every decision through the lens of the passenger, and that leads to us being able to beat our financial plan. And that clearly is important from a financial point of view, but also in these times of low inflation, it's essential that we are working hard to beat our targets to be able to offset the low inflation environment. And then, of course, winning support for expansion. And just to give you a sense of some of the things you'll see coming up in those things, we, from a mojo point of view, we're doing some practical things. We're putting in place a saver plan. This is the equivalent of a share save scheme for all of our colleagues at Heathrow, which aligns all of their objectives with our objectives. So they mirror these four priorities that the management are incentivized on. And that just helps to make sure everyone is working together towards the same set of goals. Equally, we're helping to develop talent. We've got some very capable people who come in as security officers, well-paid secure roles, who could do far more. And we're increasingly moving them into management roles and giving them a career path. So we're supporting that. The runway marathon, if any of you want to join in, we are holding a marathon later in the year in September, where during the hours where the runway is closed, we will be attempting to run a marathon. Now, you'll know that that would be quite challenging, even for the best of us. So we're running it in relays, you were pleased to know. So that'll be a bit of fun, and we'll raise some money for our company charities. From a service point of view, the kind of things you will see coming up, if you're flying through Terminal 5, you may see quite a lot of construction work going on. What we're doing there is putting in a new escalator to give us more flexibility with our transfer passengers so that they don't all have to go through the northern end of security. They can also come through the southern end. And that means if you're a departing passenger, there'll be fewer times when T5 North is closed off, which will be very welcome, I'm sure. And you'll also see us putting in a new fast track lane in T5 North for business passengers. So we're trying to make it easy and quick for people to get through security, and I'm sure many of you will benefit from that. We're also putting in more immigration e-gates. So you'll see work taking place in all of our immigration halls, but in Terminal 5, we'll go from 5 to 15 e-gates, and that will help to get people through on the arriving journey much more quickly. From a Beat the Plan point of view, the kind of things you'll see, the next wave of new stores opening in Terminal 5, and some of these are going to be really lifting the retail experience in for our passengers. So for Christmas, you'll be able to enjoy the wonderful retail experience of Hermes, which I'm sure will be welcomed, alongside Louis Vuitton and some of the other great stores we have there. And this will be a really world-class opportunity for people traveling through the airport. As Michael alluded to, we'll continue to drive efficiencies through some of the workforce changes that we're making and by managing energy demand. And that, of course, is not only saving cost, is also reducing our carbon footprint. Let me come on to expansion. There's a number of things going on there. And just to remind you of where we are with the processes on slide 18, the Conservative government, the coalition government actually, set up the Airports Commission with cross-party support to look at how to keep Britain as an aviation hub. That was back in September 2012. So nearly 3 years ago now. And they set out some very tough criteria that had to be met to make sure that the recommendation had a balance of doing what was right for the economy with what was right for local communities and for the environment. And over the last 3 years nearly, we have been putting together an entirely new plan to see how Heathrow could meet those needs. And just 3 weeks ago, we found out with only an hour's notice of the rest of the world that we have been selected with our new Northwest Runway proposal. And that's a great opportunity. And what was particularly pleasing was the clarity of the recommendation. It was absolutely clear that if Britain is going to remain as one of the world's great trading nations, only Heathrow expansion will deliver that. And that's because only Heathrow can get to the emerging markets of the world, 40 new long-haul destinations, but also because only Heathrow expansion will deliver the export capacity that we need. We're the biggest port in the UK, over a quarter of all UK exports go in the passenger planes from Heathrow. And if we want to grow our exports, if we want to become, if we want to overtake France and Germany, which is the government's ambition, We can only do that by expanding Heathrow. So that's a very clear recommendation. The government has said that they will make a decision by the end of the year, and they've just set up a committee of cabinet members to review the recommendation and make a decision. So we can start to see the engines of government moving to make a decision, and I'm confident they will make the right decision. The Prime Minister, having taken the political leadership 3 years ago, will now take the political leadership now to get on and do the right thing in the interests of the country. And on slide 19, we just give an overview of what it is that we're building, and it's a very different plan to the one that we had 6 or 7 years ago. And this is not just about concrete, this is about connecting Britain to global markets and connecting all of Britain, being able to reconnect places like Inverness and Newquay that have lost their flights into Heathrow over the last 10 years while we have been full, and give more competition and choice on the remaining UK routes in Scotland and the north of England. It's about up to 40 new long-haul destinations. That would make Britain the best-connected country in the world, and that is vital to our role in attracting inward investment, making it easy for tourists and for students to come here, but also easy for our exporters to get to global markets. And as part of our master plan, we will be doubling our cargo capacity, which will make it easier for our exporters to get around the world. While we're doing all that, we will meet noise targets. We'll actually have fewer people impacted by aircraft noise, even with expansion, than there are today. And we'll meet climate change and air quality targets. And those are things that the Airports Commission has confirmed. And for the first time, in a country which has tended to invest in infrastructure on a relatively piecemeal basis, we will have an integrated transport system with five motorways and five railway lines connecting at Heathrow. And that means that we'll be able to connect all of Britain to global markets by rail, road, or air. And one of the great prizes here is employment, 180,000 new jobs up and down the country. And that's because we're not just about helping tourists from the UK get to where they want to go on their summer holidays. We are about getting overseas tourists into the UK. And China is the biggest outbound tourist market in the world today. We'll have more links into China, making it easy for Chinese tourists to come here and spend their money, but also for students to come and study at our world-class universities all across the UK, and for inward investors to choose the UK as their base within Europe. So that'll be a big prize. And for getting exporters and their exports to global markets. But at a local level, 40,000 new jobs, and that is a huge opportunity. And we're now starting to work with schools and colleges, businesses locally, and the unions to make sure that we can deliver those skilled jobs in the future. So we'll be working with schools to make sure that the schools have the right teaching, kids get the right skills to be able to come and work at the airport as the engineers and accountants and customer service people of the future. And that's a very exciting opportunity. And one thing that's been striking since the recommendation came out is there has been a wave of support for expansion. Every business group, from the Federation of Small Businesses through to the CBI, Chambers of Commerce, from Inverness in the north to Newquay in the south, and from Northern Ireland over to East Anglia, have come out supporting Heathrow expansion. Many businesses, 270 business leaders, wrote to the Prime Minister in support just last week. Local people, local councils have come out in support. Lots of airports have come out in support. The unions have come out in support. But politicians from up and down the country and from all political parties came out in support. And I was at an event the other day with the chairman of the 1922 Committee, which is a conservative backbench organization. And he said that he thought that if there was a vote in Parliament, 600 out of the 650 MPs would back Heathrow expansion. Now, I thought that was a little bit ambitious of him, but it's encouraging that, given that the Conservative Party hasn't been able to give a view yet, but the Labour Party and the other political parties have, and they have been supportive, it just shows that there is a groundswell for support. And when you think about how challenging any infrastructure project is, it's very rare to get this level of support pulling through for big projects like this to happen. In fact, I can't think of any other which has had this level of support to make it happen. And actually, since the recommendation, I haven't heard any new voices coming out saying that the Airports Commission got it wrong. There are people who had already taken a view before the Commission came out with their recommendation, even though they didn't know what that recommendation was. but no new voices have come out. And I think that's a great credit to the Commission for the excellent work they've done over the last 3 years. So what happens now? Well, we're now in a new phase. We're now mobilizing to be able to make this happen as quickly as possible. Government said they will make a decision by the end of this year, and we're aiming for a planning consent approved by the Secretary of State for Transport in 2019. And our preferred route is a development consent order following a national policy statement. That would allow us to get on and start the construction in 2020, so shovels in the ground in 2020, and the new runway operational in 2025. So our intensive build period will be between 2020 and 2030, when we're building the runway, the road network, the surface access, the baggage system, and, of course, new terminals. And that will be when the major capital investment starts and the major funding is needed. Ahead of that, there'll be funding in the order of the hundreds of millions of pounds to fund the planning application. Overall, we're looking at about £16 billion expansion program, and I've described some of the things that covers. So this is a great opportunity. We have time to start planning this, and in fact, we'll start working with the supply chain very soon to start lining people up to be able to deliver this. And our plan is that we build on the strength that we have at the moment. If you think about Heathrow as an asset, we have trebled the size of the regulated asset base in the last 10 years or so, building Terminal 5 and Terminal 2, and we've been able to scale our investment funding platform during that time. So it's a very successful model. The regulatory asset base has been a very effective form of regulation. So our expectation is we'll keep on doing the same again. We'll have the same regulated asset base, so we'll just have a single asset rather than a split grab. We look to forward fund the investment as we have done with Terminal 5 and Terminal 2 and just scale up what we have at the moment. And our aim is to maintain the current investment grade credit ratings. And this is a plan which is backed by all our shareholders, and they're very committed to having more of a good thing. They see Heathrow as being the preeminent infrastructure investment in the world, and they want to have a larger exposure to that investment. So what happens in the immediate next steps is that government need a bit of space to do their own assessment of the Airports Commission recommendation. So that's taking place at the moment. That will then lead to a decision before the end of the year. And we will be working with government and with other stakeholders, in particular the airlines, to make sure that we have a plan that can be delivered, and I'm confident that we will find a way of doing so. We'll start doing the groundwork for the planning process, so engaging with the supply chain, mapping out the kind of skills we will need, and starting to choose our partners for that. And we'll do practical things like in September we'll start our traffic surveys, as there are certain times of year, and that's a key part of our planning consent. As I mentioned, we will also start very quickly on working with the supply chain on the skills we will need for building and the skills we will need in 10 years' time when the airport opens. So things are starting to move into this new phase, and we're looking to get on with it. And that's my call to government. Let's get on with this. We've got the recommendation. It's very clear. We've got huge support. Let's make it happen. And the CBI has said that every month that goes by without a decision is costing this country £1 billion of economic growth. That is the opportunity cost of not getting on with it. So we are keen to see that it does happen. So our messages on expansion are it's best for Britain. The whole of the UK will benefit from expansion. It's backed by Britain. You can see all the names of the organisations coming up behind it. It's an entirely different plan to the one that the Prime Minister rejected 5 years ago, and it's designed around the standards that he set out. So we have changed so that he doesn't have to, and we're ready to go. We just want to get on with this now. So that's our plan, I think we've got good momentum. I'd love to open things up to questions, and perhaps we can start with any questions in the room, and then we'll open up to questions on the line. And I hope someone's got a financial question, so I can pass it over to Michael. Yes, we've got a question over here. There are some microphones just on the way.
Thank you. I have three questions. The first one is on the workforce efficiencies. Mm-hmm. The pension savings are already included in the 400 million that you have achieved so far?
Yes, they are, yes.
Okay. The other bit, when you mentioned voluntary redundancies, I guess that that's not included in the 400 million. How many people are you targeting in this voluntary redundancy program?
Well, some of our voluntary redundancies are, and that's already taken place, and we have some people who are just leaving the business currently. So that's a rolling program of voluntary redundancies. Most of that is built into our numbers, and there's an opportunity for more of that going forward.
Okay, and then the second question is on the expansion. You have mentioned several times that the cabinet will make a decision by the end of this year. Is that a legally binding timetable, or that's your expectation?
That's what the government has said that they will do.
Okay.
So it's not legally binding.
Okay, and the other one on expansion, I mean, one of the issues that some people are focusing on is the air quality issue. As far as you are concerned with the new proposal, that's no longer a problem in Heathrow. Is this correct?
Yes, exactly. And we designed our plan so that we could meet EU air quality targets. And the Air Force Commission has confirmed that we can do so. So they will need to do their own assessment on that. And a lot of this is about our plans for surface access. We currently have just over 40% of people come to the airport by public transport. And actually, over the last 25 years, our passenger volumes have grown by 80%. But we've had no more cars on the road as a result of Heathrow. That's because we've been investing in public transport, new bus routes, encouraging people to get out of their cars. We have 6,500 people who car share on their way into work. I often do that. We have 1,500 people who cycle. So there's a lot of things we've done to get people out of cars onto public transport, and the same will happen over the next 10 years. We'll have Crossrail coming in, the upgraded Piccadilly line, Western Rail access. So this is a very different opportunity.
And the last one... I mean, now you're going to be in a period until 2018 or 19, which the cash flow you generate is substantially higher than the capex and the financial cost. Is it fair to assume that you will pay out that excess cash flow at dividends, and that then you will review that policy when you go into the investment phase?
Michael, do you want to comment on that?
Sure. I mean, I can give you my. I mean, I think clearly we're looking at the whole financing. It's a key part of the deliverability of the whole plan. So. As you say, we won't be requiring substantial funds until later in the decade, and so it's part of the overall plan. As at the moment, as you say, we've reached a position where we are cash generative, so we've paid some dividends this year and last year after many years of not paying any dividends at all. So I would anticipate that it's all part of our overall capital structure. As you said, we will continue to target our investment grade credit rating. That's absolutely our intention.
Great. Well, thank you for four questions. We're ahead of the game. We've got another one here.
It's Andrew Light from Citi. I've got a couple of infrastructure and logistics questions. First of all, US Customs and Border Protection, I think, identified Heathrow as a potential pre-clearance site. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering how realistic you thought that was, and over what time frame could it be developed? And then the second question concerns this upcoming integration of Aer Lingus into the IAG group, and mm-hmm. they're obviously in a separate terminal from the others. I mean, how realistic would it be, or how difficult would it be to co-locate Aer Lingus with BA and the One World partners?
Well, the US pre-clearance is something that I know that the US authorities are keen to explore. You'll know that it happens in Dublin and in Shannon. It's not clear to us that it is possible to do in Heathrow because it requires effectively a segregated area where people can go through the border and travel through. It's also not clear to us whether it is the right thing for a hub airport to do because, to some extent, all you're doing is moving the queue from JFK to Heathrow, and that just adds to the connection times at Heathrow. I don't think that's in the airline's interest to do that. It certainly slows down our hub flow. But we're open to understanding the opportunity. Our preference is to, rather than focus on that, but to focus on technology to get people through the border. So having interoperability between the UK registered traveller type programme for getting through the border and Global Entry, which is the US equivalent, that would be far more effective, I think, and for frequent travellers, be a much better experience and fit within the existing infrastructure. In terms of Aer Lingus, my understanding is the intention is to keep Aer Lingus operationally separate. Flights from Ireland have to have specific facilities. They're part of the common travel area, which means there's no immigration, but there is customs. And we only have two terminals which can do that, which are Terminal 5 and Terminal 2. We don't have capacity in Terminal 5 to move all the Aer Lingus flights over. So for the foreseeable future, we would expect that Aer Lingus would continue to operate in Terminal 2. And we've heard nothing from IAG to suggest that they have different plans from that. In fact, it supports the autonomy of Aer Lingus within the IAG group. But what we will be looking to do, of course, is to make sure we've got good transferring flows between all of those terminals. I think that will be a positive thing. So we'll be working with the airlines to make sure that that happens. Thank you. Great. If you can just wait for the microphone so people can pick up. Thank you.
I guess you understand that the first point, the third runway will be operational is sort of about a decade's time. And I was wondering if you thought there were going to be an impact on Heathrow's position from that delay or that period to get there. And if so, is that sort of recoverable or is it sort of permanent setback that then you grow from there?
Oh, well, I think will other people continue to move ahead of us? Absolutely. We've seen Paris overtake us with more long-haul destinations in the last 12 months, and that will continue to happen in the next 10 years. And that's the cost of Britain not investing in the right infrastructure. But it is absolutely possible to win that back. And you can see the demand that there is at Heathrow. I've got 30 airlines who would like to increase their business at Heathrow or come into operate from the expanded Heathrow. So that's a huge opportunity. And that's because of a couple of things. One is the strength of London. People want to come to London. It's got a strong point-to-point base. But also it's fantastically well-located for anyone flying to North or South America, and it's well-located for Asia as well. So it's the natural hub for Europe with the scale of London and the physical location that we have. So we should be the winner in this race for growth to the emerging markets. So it'll take us a little bit of time to win business back once it's become established at Paris, but we can absolutely do that. Thank you. Any more questions in the room? This one, Andrew.
Andrew Paulson, RBS, wanted to return to my favourite subject of Terminal 1. What's the plan for Terminal 1, John? Is it empty now? I think I'm right to say it's the redevelopment of the terminal isn't anticipated in Q6, is that right? Or you know, what's the thinking around the investment there?
So for Terminal 1, the next step is that we will demolish it, and then we'll double the size of Terminal 2 over its footprint. And the timing at which we do that will depend on the phasing of our expansion plans. So we haven't got a specific date yet at which we will do that. But the opportunity there is that once we have doubled the size of Terminal 2, we can then close Terminal 3 and demolish that and build out the rest of our master plan. So over time, we will just have two large terminals between the runways, based on Terminal 5 and Terminal 2, so it's Heathrow East and Heathrow West. And underneath them will be an integrated rail network connecting to north, south, east and west, and an integrated baggage and people moving system so that people can get easily and quickly between any part of the airport. And that makes Heathrow not only the best connected airport in the world, but a very efficient, integrated airport. So that's our plan. Exact timing, I don't know yet. But it's quite a milestone seeing Terminal 1 closed, because it's most passengers, I think, were glad to move out of there into newer facilities. But we had some people at the closing ceremony who were there when it opened, which was remarkable. And they had a few tears in their eyes because it had been such a big part of their lives. Any more questions in the room? Can we just open the line to any questions on the phones?
Thank you. If you have a question, excuse me, if you have a question, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name is announced, you can ask your question. If you find your question is answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel. So once again, that's 01 to ask a question, or 02 if you need to cancel. There'll be a brief pause now whilst we register your questions. Okay, our first question comes from Stephen Defoe of Scotiabank. Go ahead, sir, your line is open.
Oh, good morning, and congratulations for achieving such great customer service records while at the same time making efficiencies. It's quite a management achievement. There is still more to go to the $600 million target of efficiency gains in the period. Could you just describe a bit of the pension consultation initiative, what the next step is there, and perhaps more broadly what the next steps are in achieving the $600 million target would be?
Yes, I'll pass over to Michael, I'll just talk for a while to give him a chance to collect his thoughts.
Okay, talk
go
away.
Ahead. Oh, go ahead.
I carry on. So thank you very much for your question. On the pension side, so we have completed the consultation. The changes are understood, and we have support of our colleagues in the business. So we will be proceeding with those changes, and those are savings that are within, as I said earlier, within the $400 million. I mean, there's a number of other initiatives we have really across the board. So I can't point to a sort of one of large initiatives that close a £200 million gap, but what we have is a lot of initiatives around our further work on our contracts, further workforce changes, head office changes. There's other sort of commercial initiatives as well. So there's really a whole kind of range and a continuation, acceleration of some things that we're already doing, if you like. The voluntary severance is one that we mentioned, where some of the benefits are in the $400 million, but not all of them are. So, you know, we're confident at the moment. We would certainly hope to exceed $600 million. It's a challenging target, but that is something that we're very focused on doing, especially given the pressure on our revenue. So it's something that is at the forefront of our minds.
Yes, and as you say, it's not easy, and particularly driving improved service while reducing costs is not easy, but I think we've had a very constructive engagement with our unions and our colleagues in the business, and from a pension point of view, our aim has been to find a way of keeping our defined benefit plan open, but bringing the cost down more in line with our defined contribution plan, and that's the basis on which we have been reaching agreement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, once again, if there are any further questions on the line, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now. Okay, as we're receiving no further questions from the phones, I'll pass back to the main room.
Great, well, thank you, and thank you for the questions. I'm delighted we got three times as many questions as I had set my target for, so I'm glad that we're beating the plan on that one as well. So I hope you get a sense that we are doing what we set out to do, driving our cost savings, driving improvements in the top line of the business, and we've got a good forward plan for what we're going to be doing. Our main focus is on delivering our base plan, transforming customer service at Heathrow, but at the same time, we're increasingly building up our capability to deliver the transformation of Heathrow, the next phase of expansion. And next time we are together, we'll hopefully have more certainty on that, and we'll be able to talk about that in a bit more detail. But thank you again for being with us today, and thank you for your ongoing support in funding Heathrow. Thank you very much.